Welcome to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform. Welcome to the show, everyone. Today we've got Ken Hunter with us. Ken is VP of Technology at the Michaels Stores. Welcome to the show, Ken. Thanks so much for taking the time to do this. I've been dying to speak to you. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It's an honor and a pleasure to be able to be on your show. So this is pretty exciting.
Yeah, we spoke a couple of weeks ago, and we've got a lot of interesting stuff to talk about today. I mean, I couldn't wait. So let's dive in at the deep end then, shall we? And let's see from kind of when you started out in your career in technology, I want to find out how you navigated that and how you've got to where you are today as VP of tech at the Michaels Stores.
Yeah, I think when you know, looking back at a career and where you get to the point, I think to a certain degree, the word navigating may be a little bit strong in terms of how I got here. There's always a bit of luck. There's always a bit of happenstance. There's always a bit of missteps, sidesteps. But for me to get to the point that I am is just kind of look back and say, wow, the culmination. I started my career in the military.
Wow.
And when I started in the military, I remember this and gosh, thinking about this, my interview to get in long time ago, they were like, so what do you want to do? You know? And I said, I want to be in the Navy and I want to work with computers. And the guy looked at me and said, we don't do computers in the Navy, which he was, and he was absolutely wrong. So, and because that's exactly what I ended up doing. I ended up getting in, and the community that I became part of was information warfare,
right,
or what led into what is now known as information warfare. And that was, and essentially that led to my entire career outside, because it deals with, I mean, we were dealing with what they had called big data before big data was even had that term. That we were dealing with how do you develop, you know, customized software applications to solve problems, to make things better just from that point. And in fact, I got out of the military. When I got out, I got my master's in the military. Here's my idea for a PhD, and I was showing it to some people that I worked with, and they were like, this is big. This is a company. So I was like, oh, really? So I got out and started my own company, building some software for low level data processing, some really trying to change the way some of the architectures work. But it really gave me insight onto how to really develop, how to, you know, make data and software combine to make a culmination of that. Obviously, the course of what most software companies go through or startups go through, where I am now at Michaels is a good indication that yes, my company did not survive, but the learnings I got from it were valuable. Went after that, went into contracting, which was also another broad thing because I need like paychecks. And my wife does too. And, we went and, but that also gave me a broad breadth of, cause I would go from company to company to company, or in that case, many government agencies as well, getting different perspectives, seeing the good, seeing the bad, seeing the ugly, taking it in. And when it was finally settled down, I went after that to Walmart, and I was there for 13 years at Walmart in a variety of different positions. Just fantastic experience dealing with large data for them, dealing with security, dealing with applications development for financial systems, dealing with application development for just lots of utilitarian, and finally culminating with running Sam's Club in club technology, which was fantastic for how do you change things with software? How do you change things in terms of taking data that you have and making it? And how do you, as the paradigm shifts that we're dealing with in retail, how do you get ahead of it? how do you push yourself? Because if you're following it and you're that big, you won't be that big. We get to a point that you think, well, something that large is, you know, they're going to be around forever. The reality is we've seen plenty of huge companies go down when they stop trying to say, what do we need to do? Not just for today,
oh, exactly,
but for the future.
Yeah.
That was it. And then got pulled into Michaels from there into the position I'm currently in is because, well, when you end up something like that, you could take a look at Walmart and them pushing ahead of the curve, but you have a lot of retail places that are particularly like niche markets. Michaels is a crafts hobby store, very kind of a niche tied in, and they can follow the curve a little bit until they realized that they couldn't anymore. And they said that they needed to make some changes. They were going to be left behind as you know, the craft markets online and all that just started eating them up a little bit. And so we came in to say, how do we shift everything there? And that's where I landed at Michaels on how do we change our e-commerce business to not just be the 20 years ago, a reflection of the store sold online. But how do you actually kind of leverage and now you become the integration, not just a digital presence online and a physical presence, but how do you make it and combine the two and leverage it to become a capability that's larger than what you have is just two components. And that's what I'm doing right now, working on the e-commerce piece to tie all that together.
Yeah, amazing. Really nicely tied up as well. And there's a lot of points there that I found really interesting. There was one point which you mentioned when these large companies stop looking how to progress, that's where they fail, if they stop looking towards the future. And, you know, it's been brought up a few times on the podcast in the past where I've thought, you know, is it not risky to make huge changes? And then the answer has always been, no, it's really risky not to make those changes. And I've always found that really interesting. I mean, how do you know what the right move is? I mean, how can you tell what would be really beneficial to move the company forward? Because there's a lot of different options out there.
Yeah, there are a lot of different options. And you end up, you can't say that you decisively will know it. So, and I'll go back even to Walmart, because that's an example where we could say is that they were in that position. And they knew early on that they had to do something different. They said, we just can't have it. You know, they got an online presence and they said, we know we have to be different to differentiate ourselves in the future. And so that's when they quickly came up with, well, we need to combine, have the integration of what physical and digital is. And then they said, well, what does that mean? And they're like, yeah, we don't know yet. your point is they knew they needed to do something and they knew they kind of had this sense of where it needed to be, but they didn't know exactly what it was. And a lot of it then became trials and errors. And that goes into the point that it's more important for that atmosphere to do those changes than to actually know what your change is going to be at the beginning. And the atmosphere is a couple things. And if you don't foster it right, you won't end up with that. The fostering of that is one, you have to be able to say, we'll fail fast, and that's not a bad thing. A lot of times we get into places, and that's an easy thing to say.
Yeah.
It's a harder thing to do because people get angst when you say, no, we went down a wrong road. We'll back up and go again. It causes tension, but you can't, if someone then does it once and then all of a sudden they get slapped because of it, no matter what you say is fail fast. If they get slapped, we don't trust what you're saying. You actually have to mean that. Now, if you can repeatedly go down the same road and not learn, then you get, okay, now you're doing something wrong. But you got to foster that, the aspect of saying a failure going down a road means, well, we learned that road was wrong. So it's not really a failure. It's a decisive moment. And that fosters that aspect. The other part of it is the realization is that some of the best ideas come from all over the place. Some of the you know, the you may say up at the top, and you know, has some good ideas, and sometimes they do, but most of the time all those ideas come from the people that are in the trenches, you know, using a military analogy, on the forefront of it, because they see, they understand, and then those bubble up. And for the people that make those decisions to pursue those avenues have to be willing to say, let's take a chance.
There's a really good example. There's a really good example here, which I just thought, which I just realized, when a company stops and doesn't actively try and move forward, it can then fail really quickly. And I don't know if you had it in the US, but there's a company called Blockbuster. Did you have that?
Yes, we did.
You did, right.
So, used to. Actually, yeah. The very last one just closed not too long ago. And I was like, what? There was one left?
Yeah. But I think didn't Netflix try and sell Netflix to Blockbusters? Or there was something. Yeah. Do you know the story?
Exactly.
I'm not sure of it. But
So exactly. That was a case where... and this is the point that also is, because Blockbuster started, it was an innovation when they did it. Let's rent videos. Wow. This is, you know, let's, let's do this and be able, you know, it was kind of like pushing the envelope. I mean, Walmart, when they started, they were pushing the envelope. They actually, Sam Walton went to, Ben Franklin and said, I got this great idea to be able to change the way we sell stuff. And they're like, yeah, no, you're wrong.
Wow.
And Ben Franklin's gone for the most part, and Walmart's, you know, but the thing is at one point, like Blockbuster, they were that, hey, we're changing the paradigm. And then they're like, after that, they're like, we're not changing again. And that was the point for them is, yeah, Netflix came to them. You know, apparently they're like, people aren't going to do that, you know? It's easy in hindsight to say, oh, what a mistake, you know, Redbox came out and then took the market. And then by the time Blockbuster was like, oh my gosh, we got to do something. They just tried to mimic what was already out there then. Instead of trying to, and that was their thing, that, and that's what killed them is, well, if all you're going to do is mimic what's out there, you have a dying core, you're going to mimic what's out there, you just become irrelevant. And they did. Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting story, isn't it? Because it basically seemed to fold overnight as soon as Netflix became kind of popular.
Yeah.
Crazy. It's crazy. So that's a classic example of that. But I'm really interested in what you're doing at Michael's now to kind of push the boat out. To progress and move forward with the business.
Yeah, absolutely. So I could talk a little bit about, you know, kind of those things where we're pushing it. So to some degree is like we're trying to do that leapfrog. In terms of that is the leapfrogging is where it goes into is not just mimic, okay, make our website, e-commerce site, just another better and fancier one like it exists. But how do you do that? How do you make and leverage those parts? And that's the part that we're looking at right now is to say, okay, as we launch and go through a new kind of online experience, e-commerce experience, how do we actually take advantage of the fact that some of our competitors and the ones like, I mean, really popular one, Etsy, you know, when you take a look at it, how do you compete with them? They've got a huge e-commerce footprint over us now. We're behind them. If we just say, well, we'll make another Etsy, we'll be the next Blockbuster of arts and crafts, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
So it's to say one thing Etsy does not have is that physical presence as well. So how do we leverage that? And so the thought process with the building the software that we're doing and for the environment is how do you make it so that essentially you combine the two and you do two things with that. One is the main focus is how do you create an experience for the customer?
Mm-hmm.
And so because people are looking now for more, I could buy from anything. I could Google anything. I could pull up something. What's a little different about what we can present is we can make experiences. And experiences can be something, it could be trivial, it could be just something, but you got to have some kind of value add, something where you tie. And the other side of it is, how do you make for our employees, our associates, how do you make their life better? Because sometimes if you're in a physical store, people are looking for interaction again. Many are. I mean, particularly after COVID, they want to go in and they want to interact and they want a meaningful interaction. And if your employees are dealing with all their minutiae that they have to do, they're not available for that interactive experience. You've just lost them and they see no value to the physical presence anymore. But at the same time, when they're in that store, they need to have the value, and they're used to now, I don't just see what's in front of me and I'm stuck with that. I see whole varieties, comparisons, ratings, I want to have that same experience in there. When I'm online, I don't have to hunt and find something. I search. I guess sometimes with bad search you do, but with search you just, I don't want to have to walk aisle after aisle looking back and forth and losing something. I want to know where to go. So, and then I want to be led there. So it's like an experience could be I'm looking for something to make wreaths. Is then be able to say, go into that, have the app while you're in the store leads you there with an AR, navigation to help you go through there, get you there. You see what you have. Then you also have augmented, selection. Here's what you have here to pick out. We could also deliver this to your house if you want these other options. Or if you want right is here and you don't want to carry it, we'll deliver it to your house anyway. But also with the e-commerce expansion is if I buy something online, I should be able to return to the store, or I should be able to go pick it up from the store if I don't want it. Those are real simple, straightforward ones that you see already. But some of it is like when we're talking about like a marketplace, something like an Etsy, where you're not dealing with just the corporate items, you're dealing with, hey, how do you do all this stuff? Still have all those options available to you. Still have those things where I can say, well, I bought this. It's not Michael's, but Michael's was the marketplace. I'm going to return it to the store anyway. And they take it. And then also, then you're, because that makes your experience frictionless. Exactly. As a customer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the future, is how do you make those things frictionless? I don't have to box it up. I don't have to figure out how to send it. I don't have to worry about shipping it. I take it there. They take it in and I'm done.
Yeah.
So,
and actually what I've realized over the past year with COVID, everyone seems to think internet shopping is the be all and end all, but actually I've realized that the physical shopping is so important, as well as the online shop e-commerce, because there's actually a lot of faults with online shopping sometimes. When you're having to return something, that's an absolute nightmare. And people enjoy I personally really enjoy the experience of going into a shop, seeing the item, holding it, for an example, and taking it out of the shop. I mean, there's so many ways that retail, I think, brick and mortar retail is going to come back in full force, I think. And especially if you're making huge new developments with technology, like you're mentioning AI in the shop, that would be, unbelievable, There was something you mentioned very at the very start of the conversation, which was data and software. And I'm curious to find out, there must be a lot of dependency on data in your field of work. I mean, there must be a huge dependency. And then, if there is, how do you use that data to be able to leverage the technology that you're looking to implement?
Very carefully.
Yeah.
So, I think you probably want a little more than that. The problem is the proliferation of data now is overwhelming. The amount of data that we're storing, and so you look for things. Which is, I need information, not just data. you know, and it goes, which pulls it in. One of the things, so I worked in a lot of the, with my background, I worked in the data science portion a lot. So, and I would say the bulk of ours, some people say 80%, is not the actual mathematics of doing data science and doing the algorithms. That's the fun part, the cool stuff. Well, for the math geeks that, but you know, but 80%, the bulk of it is finding the data, understanding the data, and knowing when it's garbage, because there's a lot of garbage out there. There's a lot. And so once you get that, then you can funnel it into your algorithms that you have to be able to do, you know, improve that experience. Because one of the things that we're looking for is how do you, you know, if we're making experiences for people, we have to make those experiences based on data and understanding that data.
Yeah.
And that means is, you know, if we're finding that, you know, people are, they like, look, it, the simplest thing, and I'll only go, but if you get to a store and say, you know, where's the beads, and I take you to the wrong side of the store, you just lost confidence.
Absolutely.
And that's just a simple, that's not even a real, you know, high complicated problem, but actually, it sounds like, because as you have inventory flowing in and out and moving and relayouts inside a physical store, locations change, inventory changes, things. So having an accurate and to be able to respond to you and lead you to that right place to be able to do it. Well, that's based on data. Now you say, well, I want the accuracy of data. That's where it gets complicated. Mm. And you do a lot of work on, even for just this problem, is my inventory correct? Is my inventory level correct? And in the meantime, and it goes into, you know, what other information can I get out of this? One of the ones that we had worked on in was using, how do we use video cues from the systems that are around at Sam's Club? I'd done this. How do you take those video cues in and be able to make determinations like, oh gosh, we're low on stock. Nobody has walked by it and reported it yet, but I could see that the level's low. Let's get stock out there so that that we have inventory to sell. But also, well, wait a second, there's a safety issue. Look, there's something hanging off a top shelf. Somebody go take care of that right now. And that's based on, you know, image processing, using AI on that image processing, and then being able to pinpoint things. Or even have, and we've had this, is where somebody's reported it. They said, I put this here. It was like, no, you didn't. And, you know, just be able to correct that. It's like, oh yeah, that's right. I marked the wrong place, you know, or something like, you know. And so to be able to make those corrections and use AI, because that data core, you've got to have it correct. And then you could use it to trigger so much more. And it goes into things, you know, people want, you know, some customized shopping experience, but they don't want their privacy invaded. Whew, okay. Yeah. Let's balance this out to where we can helpfully get you, you know, the information you need, but not like mine a whole bunch of things. I remember reading once, and this was a different company that I was not involved with and it will remain nameless, but they sent based on shopping data, they sent a coupon for baby things to the home. Said, hey, because you've been shopping baby stuff. Well, it turned out it was a young girl who was pregnant and hadn't told her parents yet.
Oh, no.
Parents opened that up and saw it. And so you're like, oh my gosh, you don't want to be invaded. Yeah. Friction caused because we didn't give her the opportunity to tell her parents.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Yeah. And so that was, I would consider an invasion of privacy. Mm. But at the same time, you want to be able to say is that there's, you know, you're tending towards interest in these type of things, well, we want to be able to say, hey, you know, your world is maybe bigger than you realize. There are other options. There are other things in there. And so how do you balance it out? And that's is the use of data, but the smart use of data.
Mm, yeah.
And how do you deal with that?
Wow. I mean, there's so many moving parts to this. I mean, it's everything, isn't it? It's every single little thing that is involved in the physical and digital e-commerce platform, you have to think about every single minute detail, don't you, really?
Oh, absolutely.
There was another thing that I wanted to bring up. Now, I've seen this being advertised advertised on LinkedIn all the time. And it's Amazon Go. I think it's Amazon Go, is it? The Amazon shops where you can kind of walk in, pick up a sandwich, put it in your pocket, pick up a drink, put it in your pocket, and then just walk out the shop. Now,
yes.
What are your initial thoughts on that?
Well, it's great. And we actually did, when I was at Sam's Club, we also did start up one, and we called it Sam's Now, which was a small experimental store in the same vein. Amazon Go is tremendous because it's used as a technology incubator almost. And that is, you know, they could try stuff and quickly pivot and learn and gain from it. There's a lot of learnings that go on. I was particularly interested in this, like, hey, buddy, can you hand me that? Yeah. Okay. Now you're paying for it.
I never thought of that, but that is a loophole, isn't it?
There's loopholes, and they were learning from those. Those were early loopholes that, you know, you learn from things. And at Sam's Club with our Sam's Now, we did the same type thing. We put experimental technologies that we had, in some cases it was, boy, this is going to be great. We could roll this out chain wide. Another one is, this is great. There's no way we can roll this out train wide though. It's too expensive. Okay. It doesn't, you know, it would be too much to maintain and the value from it just wouldn't. But there are some things that, you know, and it's just like, oh, that didn't work. Back to the drawing board. And those type things, those are the places, and to invest in that. Those are what companies do to invest in the new software, taking those aspects and to say, hey, can we try this here? Will it go? Ooh. Pun not intended, Amazon Go. So, does that have a broader application? Is it sustainable? And you take a look at some of like Amazon Go, and you have some of like the camera proliferation that they have, you end up with, gosh, that's not quite sustainable. Yeah. But then you end up with, but the learnings that they have from it, how do you apply that into something that is? And those are the great things. And so they develop a lot of software. They have a lot of QA that goes on as they try and evaluate the things. We did as well in Sam's Now to say how, you know, we did a lot of experimenting with one of the great features that we had was Scan and Go, not quite the Amazon where just pick it up and we recognize that you go, you know, as you go. But the amount of cameras that they did to do that was not even a cost effective for us. So we said, well, use your phone and scan. And we were one of the early one adopters of that in this place where it's like, okay, don't have a checkout. In fact, in the Amazon Now Club, there are no registers. It is completely done. All purchases are done on your phone. And so that was an experiment to see, will it sustain? How well will it be taken if you've taken it? And the answer is but at the end of the day, for general purpose, you need some registers. there are some people that just don't need that interaction. Going back to that interaction aspect that we've talked about before, people, you know, there are some people that want the interaction. There are some people that want to say, I don't want to have, you know, interaction at all. Stay away from me. You know, the 6-foot pole, stay away from me. but some people now coming out of COVID are just the opposite. They're craving that interaction, and they actually may crave it more than they did before COVID.
Definitely. I'm kind of, I don't want to say worried, but a little bit skeptical about this kind of Amazon Go kind of thing, because I don't know if the public are even ready for something this far advanced. I mean, because it's totally different to what people we've been used to since we were born, essentially, since we started going to shops, what we've ever known.
Well, yeah, and I guess it is to a certain degree you have that, but you realize it. Well, right now it's a gimmick.
Yeah, that's true. You know?
But how many things started out as a gimmick? I'll go back. I remember this is it, talking about technology and the ways is that this there was a report in this essentially it was you know, this technology is a job killer. It is going to change. It is going to change everything. This technology is going to make our economy nosedive. We're not going to be able to support people. This is a horrible thing. And the technology they were, this actually was written in the late 1700s. It was about the cotton gin. which actually changed the way they farmed cotton and changed the industry into the textile industry. But you know, back then they were all like, oh, this is terrible. This is terrible. It's going to be, and they were thinking about jobs. They were thinking about, you know, sometimes I say is I'll look at Amazon Go or the type of things we're doing with this, that we did with the Sam's Now, or even some of the experimental things we're trying with Michael's Now that we're still kind of behind the scenes. And I take a look, and some of it is just like that. It's like, okay, how much of this is, you know, going down that wrong road? How much of this is going down the right road, or how much of this is creating a new road? Time will tell. To your point, I'm not sure that the Amazon Go looking like it does is the future.
Yeah, I agree.
But if the ideas coming out of it may lead to that future.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And on that point as well, do you think there is still that fear of technology taking over people's jobs? Do you think that philosophy remains the same, or do you think that's kind of changing now?
There's always that fear because it's change. But we've had technology changes and we've never run out of jobs. The jobs change. And I think that's really the essence of what we're talking about is jobs change. In the stores, like we're talking about, like a lot of the software we're doing is a lot of automation of those menial tasks. And it's not to eliminate the jobs. It's to turn those jobs to focus on the things that only people can do, the interactive, the experience, right, the being, you know, those type things. With the things that we can automate, if we take that time out, you know, then we can focus on those, on the things that make the difference. Because most places are at a point that they've reduced the labor as much as they can already. You know, that most people, they say, oh, do more with less. Yeah, they've already done that. Now we need to figure out, how do we get them to do the right things, the more meaningful things, and eliminate the things that take the time away from doing those meaningful things. So I'm not feared about there won't be enough jobs. I just think is we need to, as the change comes, look in to say, we change with it. And that can be scary. But at the end of the day, we usually look back and go, oh, yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
But it was scary going through it.
Yeah. But as I've been talking to you, Ken, I've realized, you know, you've been in the industry and you know so much about the industry. So I'm really interested to find out how you stay ahead of the curve with this. I mean, where do you find your resources? Where do you learn about it?
It's everywhere. And what I mean by everywhere is obviously you read, read as much as you can. People are willing to talk, discern. People are discern what you're reading. People talk junk. But really a lot of it is, it goes back to something I was saying is you listen to the ideas. I think that the biggest thing is to have a listening mentality and then discern, a discernment that goes on top of it, where you digest it, where you see how does that fit. And listening is, that's actually, it's amazing. It was one of the things I just heard the other day is like, hey, we teach reading, we teach, you know, writing, you know, arithmetic, we teach, you know, we don't teach listening so much. And listening is not just hearing, of course. It's understanding what you hear, putting it into context. And I think that's huge, is you go into a lot of the best ideas that I said come from those people inside the stores or the shoppers that are shopping your online and are telling you, no, you're frustrating. And to listen to what they're saying and then discern what do they mean. I remember this one time. It was this one gentleman who worked inside the store was just railing on this software, and everybody was like, "Oh, he hates everything. He hates it." And I said, "Yeah, he had a lot of like whiny complaints, but there were some gems that he was basing it on that were truth. And if you paid attention and listened to what he was saying, and didn't feel attacked by it, you understood that." He actually saw a little bit better way of doing things that improved the way that our systems could provide information to him. And so that's the case where you do it. And then I think is one of the things that I've been blessed with and is the innovative spirit is then to take that information and say, how can we solve that new way? And That's there are lots of people out there. That's one of my passions is to sit there. How do we do it? Is it using something that's existing in a different way? Modify something out there that we have we did that in three steps, but guess what? That middle step, not necessary, reduce it into two. Yeah. Or even to go in and I've done this on plenty of occasions is to say, we need to create something brand new that hasn't been done before. Roll up your sleeves and get to it and do it. So that's kind of where that's kind of been my impetus to get me where I've been.
Yeah, that is so interesting because I guess it's the people you want to speak to and are the people with all the problems and all the issues with what you're doing, essentially. It might not be very good for your ego to hear it, but it's going to be helpful.
Oh, yeah. You got to check the ego. You got to, you're not going to, there are plenty that to make a difference though. I mean, you could be at the top and not be humble. You're not going to make a difference to be in a position to make a difference. You have to be humble, and to put aside your ego at times and to deal with that. That's how you're going to make a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned just before spending a lot of time digesting information. And I think that's a really good key point because, if I'm trying to find information or if I'm listening to, podcasts that I can learn from or reading blogs and things, I'm looking at, building something new or et cetera, et cetera. It takes me a lot of time just realizing what the key information is. And it takes me a long time just having it in your head. It can take weeks or even months just having it kind of ticking over, and then you think, right, that's what I'll do, that's how I'm going to approach this. And I think that is massively overlooked. I think some people jump into new ideas without giving it the proper time and proper real consideration, and I think that's where people can sometimes fall down as well. Also timing as well. Everything's sometimes, I think, the stars have to align at the right time. Maybe we're getting a little bit philosophical here, but I kind of think that's right, though.
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And I think that's the case. It goes back to a little bit of what we are inundated with data now. And it goes, like we were saying, in data and information. We are inundated with data. So much data that if you just absorb it, you'll be pounced all day long and won't make it. It won't make a difference. You have to have that exactly what you're saying. You have to have that time to think about it, to discern about it, to process it, which also means is that you need to be able to say, I need to, at a certain point, funnel the data off so that I can do that. Otherwise, because if you just keep it coming in at the constant rate, you'll never have that time.
Yeah. This leads me to an interesting question, actually. Which do you think is, I don't want to say better, but which do you think is better, failing fast or taking time to really think about a decision and then doing the decision?
the sweet spot is you, and this is the part you can't just do one. you've got to do both. And that is, if you sit there and this kind of the balance is, you know, we say we need some time to discern. Well, if you take all the time to discern, you'll be like, oh, I should have made that decision 5 years ago. But what you have to do, and this is where a balance of good leadership comes in, or, you know, experience and dealing with all those aspects, is to be able to balance it out. I know it was kind of, we live in a paradox, you know, it's we need to do both things at the same time. It's like, but they're contradictory, yeah. You know, fail fast, but you need to discern. Yeah, but you need to do both. But that is to be able to say, I need, you need to be able to think, but you need to have a point that, okay, I'm only going to do it for a certain point. And I know that at that point I've narrowed things down to, I know that there are few paths to go. That's when the fail fast comes. Cause you could end up, if you say, okay, we're going to fail fast, here's 1,000 options. You're no longer failing fast. You're repeatedly failing until you finally, you know. So what you don't want is the shotgun approach, that if I keep shooting, that maybe I'll hit something at some point. You want to have where you've gone through the discernment, saying, okay, I don't have time to just sit there and discern all the way to the end to figure it out. I'll never get there. So I need to discern as I know I've narrowed it down to something where we can fail fast and pivot and still have time to do the right thing.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a lot of areas that come into that. There's experience, like you mentioned, and then obviously data can help massively. So it's not like, you know, shooting the gun, hope with, you know, your eyes closed and hoping that you hit a target one day. Right. But I think that's a really nice point to end on, actually, Ken. I've really enjoyed chatting, and maybe should we have one more question before you go?
Absolutely, I'm all yours.
Okay, well, I've got a few in the back pocket here. I'm just trying to think about the best one. Okay, this could be interesting. So if you can think back to throughout your whole career now, what would you say, in your opinion, has been the cheapest investment that you've made that's ended up with the highest return of investment? It's a difficult question to put you on the spot with, but we've had some pretty creative answers so far. So
the cheapest investment that's had the greatest amount of return. This is going to sound a little crazy, I guess, but it's people.
Excellent.
It's absolute people, and that is the cheapest investment is time that you spend with your people, getting to know your people, getting to understand your people. The amount that you could get out of that and understanding them, they're going to do amazing things. And it just takes a little bit of time that you have to put into it to understand them, understand their motivations, understand where they are. And when you could play that, and I mean, if you know their passion, and all of a sudden, wait, you're passionate about this, and you put them on that, and then they just dig in and produce something that is, I've had people come back and it was like, can you think about this? And the next day they're like, yeah, I did it. I was like, wait, I thought this was going to be like 6 months. And, oh no, I did it overnight. I was so passionate about it. I did it. And it just created something overnight. It's like, wow. And it was just because you spent the time to know them, get to deal with them, sometimes mentor, sometimes be mentored. It's absolutely the most valuable thing you could do is time with people.
Oh, superb. What a great answer that is. Yeah. We've not had that before. We've not had that answer on the show before, which is quite surprising because it makes so much sense. We had someone the other week saying who was an engineer, and they said their cheapest investment was a mechanical pencil that they have, because they're constantly drawing their ideas down on pieces of paper and then turning them into something that could be huge for the business. But yeah, people, that is a great one. All right, that wraps it up really nicely. So thanks, Ken. I've really, really enjoyed chatting with you. Best of luck in the rest of your career, and I can't wait to put this one out into the public.
Oh, I appreciate it. This has been a lot of fun, Ben. I appreciate what you're doing. This is fantastic.
Yeah, this has been, I've really, really enjoyed this. So thanks once again. Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform.